It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Ross Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. June is here, which means training camps open next month, which means more and more verifiable reports of how guys are doing, and then us actually getting a chance to check them out in preseason games, which start in August. Always get excited anytime I get a chance to record a Fantasy Feast podcast, because Evan Silva is fantastic at what he does in his own right. And if you ever want to find these here podcasts, they're always at rostucker.com. Evan, of course, of Roto World fame, said, you know what? I got a stud that we should bring on the podcast that everybody will really enjoy. Another Roto World superstar. Let's do it.
Big Eater of the Week.
Well, as promised, really looking forward to the next 2 weeks. We got two episodes with today's guest, Raymond Summerlin of RotoWorld.com, which may mean that Evan's his boss. I'm not sure. I'm going to ask that very early because that's very important information that is useful to me. And I always thought his name was just Ray Summerlin until I got to his voicemail one time and I found out it's Raymond Summerlin. It was a very sad day for me that I wasn't able to connect with him. Raymond, everybody loves Raymond. Raymond, it's Ross, it's Evan. Thank you so much for coming on the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I think it is accurate that Evan is my boss, so I have to watch what I say whenever I'm disagreeing with him, I guess.
So question number one, am I going with Raymond or Ray for the next 20 minutes?
If you're more comfortable with Ray, you can go with that. I go by Raymond around, like in my personal life. My dad is Raymond as well, and so it just makes it simpler. But if you want to call me Ray, have at it. I don't care.
What really is it like having the one and only Evan Silva as your boss, Raymond?
It's actually nice. He lets you kind of run, and even if something you think he thinks it's dumb, which I'm sure many of the things I think he thinks are dumb, he still kind of lets you run with it, and he'll go, oh, yeah, good point, when even though I know in his mind he's thinking this guy is just an idiot. So it's kind of nice. He kind of lets you run, so I like it.
Basically, what you're saying is he's lazy, and he doesn't take the time to really care about the work you're doing or putting out, and that he's an absentee manager? Is that what you're saying? Is that fair?
That's exactly what I said. If you play it back, that's exactly what I heard come out of my mouth.
Because that's what I heard when you said that. In all sincerity, though, I got to go Ray. I'm sorry. I can't do the Raymond thing anymore.
Go for it.
I
got to go Ray.
So in all sincerity, Ray, what is your background? Because I always ask all of Evan's fantasy superstars their background. And how did Evan find you for Roto World?
Well, my background is actually as a high school economics teacher. I taught high school economics for 4 years, and I absolutely adored it. I taught actually middle school in Texas, where I live. They teach Texas history because apparently our history is much more important than any other history. And so I taught that for a year at seventh graders, which is just the absolute worst. I tell people it was my Vietnam. Like, I was ready to get out of teaching. And luckily, I got moved to high school economics. I absolutely adored it. And while I was doing that, I just started kind of writing on various sites about some of my, you know, my ideas, my fantasy football ideas. I started doing something called the Target Report, which I thought was a good piece, a good weekly piece about opportunities for fantasy wide receivers. And I guess Evan just happened to notice that. And he gave me a call one day and said, hey, would you like to, you know, start doing some news for Roto World? And from there, it just kind of grew. So I guess I owe Evan everything, which I'm sure he'll hold over my head at some point in time in the future.
How tough was it to give up the teaching gig to do this full time?
It was a really, really hard decision. It unfortunately came, the opportunity came at the end of the summer. And so I had to make a very quick decision before we went back to school. And it was difficult. This is my first year doing it full time. And I love teaching. I still go out to lunch with the teachers and listen to all of their complaints. And even listening to all those complaints, you still miss it. I guess it's kind of like, you know, a woman after she has a baby, there's some hormones that are supposedly released that make her forget how terrible labor was. And it kind of feels like that as a teacher. You get through the summer and there's something in your body that makes you forget how terrible February was. And then you decide, yeah, I think I'll give it another go. So I miss it. I miss it quite a bit. But, you know, I love what I'm doing now, and I wouldn't trade it for anything.
So we're going to do this in two parts, Ray. Today's episode, we're going to talk primarily about the players that you and Evan agree on. And then I think next week might even be more interesting, the guys you disagree on. Although it's good to hear the guys you agree on that might be polarizing guys out there, because that gives the listeners even more value and ammunition, and they should feel even better about where they're thinking about drafting those guys. I did want to discuss a Dynasty League trade in which Evan evidently made the greatest move of all time, getting AJ Green, and Fantasy Douche acquired Mike Evans plus. Evan, what happened there? I'll let you talk for a little bit now.
Well, first I'd like to say that Ray is probably our best pure football analyst at Roto World. Roto Pat is probably like our best pure writer, but Ray is probably our best pure football analyst, and really love having him on the team. I mean, he's incredible, and he works his ass off doing Roto World News, which is really the nuts and bolts of our website. But yeah, so I made a trade with the Fantasy Douche in our Roto World Dynasty League, which is a super deep 14-team dynasty league, PPR. We eliminated kickers and defense so we could use more, you know, wide receivers and tight ends and running backs in our starting lineup. And, I mean, it's maybe the league that I have the most fun playing. And Ray joined it last year. He took over a team that was not good, and he immediately, in year one, turned it into a contender. I mean, I think, Ray, did you finish top five? Top three?
Yeah, I finished top four because I believe you knocked me out of the playoffs. Maybe top six because I think you knocked me out of the playoffs. But yeah, it was a quick turnaround, one that I spent a lot of money or capital to get, but it's exciting to be back in the playoffs for sure.
So the trade was a blockbuster, and I gave up Mike Evans, Martavis Bryant, Jeremy Langford, Rook, and my first, second, fourth, and fifth round rookie picks in 2017 in exchange for A.J. Green, Kobe Fleener, and Torrey Smith. And Twitter hates this trade. I mean, you know,
that's an understatement, I think.
That's an understatement, yeah. I mean, they think that I got smoked. One thing I've noticed is that anytime you give up rookie picks and then you post that on Twitter, people think you got robbed. I mean, Twitter loves rookie draft picks, and I hate rookie draft picks. So, you know, just a difference of opinion there. Ray, you're not a brown noser or anything like that. You're not kissing my ass. You know, what were your initial feelings on the trade?
Well, I like the trade for you. I think that you absolutely paid sticker price for AJ Green. You sent me a text, I believe, early in these negotiations, and I saw that trade and I thought it was an absolute win for you. And now when I see what it turned out to be, Fantasy Douche ran a hard, hard bargain, and you certainly paid sticker price. But you went and got a guy that you like, and AJ Green, a guy that I like as well. And so it's fine sometimes to pay sticker price with a savvy guy that you're negotiating with if that's a player that you're really after, which I think this was the case. But I think more than the trade, the interesting thing for me was actually the Twitter reaction to it, which brought up kind of two ideas for me. The first that you talked about was that the public really overvalues rookie picks and really overvalues future seasons. And I think when you go back and look at dynasty ADPs from 2 and 3 years ago, the number one takeaway you should have is that we really can't project that far in the future. We have a hard enough time projecting next week. And so as that time horizon gets longer and larger, then the possibilities get even wider and wider and wider. And so we're just assuming that Mike Evans is going to keep developing, where it's possible that he has another year like he had last year and he kind of tops out at a wide receiver too, in which case you'd much rather have AJ Green over the long haul. And so I think people put way too much on rookie picks and people put way too much on future seasons, when really dynasty, even though you're going to keep this team, I always have viewed dynasty as a two-year proposition. And if you get looking any farther in the future than that, then you end up running into problems. You end up having Giovanni Bernard as the number four running back in 2014, and now he's, you know, a running back three. You end up with these situations where Josh Gordon and Calvin Johnson were two of the top three dynasty draft picks 2 years ago, and now both are out of the league. So I think when you look at situations from more than 2 years in dynasty, you really run into trouble. And then kind of taking it back to redraft, I think what you could see from the reaction here is that AJ Green is very undervalued right now, even in redraft, and people aren't putting the type of value on him that he deserves, especially with the situation as it is right now in Cincinnati, and that people are very, very much overvaluing Jeremy Langford, who by season's end might not be the number one running back on his team. So I think you can take a lot of things out of what we saw in the reaction to this trade.
Yeah, it was really interesting, really interesting. A lot of people are they value Martavis Bryant as an asset, and
yeah,
I don't really value him at all. You know, almost at all. People, yeah, like you said, they assume that Mike. There was even a discussion on Twitter about it. Blew up Twitter because it was Memorial Day and nobody else. You know, there was nothing else going on before that. Before the Warriors Thunder game. So no one had anything to talk about. So a bunch of people on fantasy Twitter were talking about it and telling me how bad I got smoked in this trade. And people have, you know, they value Martavis Bryant. They assume that, the one discussion was that Mike Evans is the best player in the deal. And like, then a bunch of guys agreed with that. And that was really surprising to me because AJ Green is one of two players in NFL history to have 1,000 yards in each of his first five NFL seasons, has missed four games in his career. I don't think that anyone is ranking Mike Evans ahead of AJ Green in redraft. Mike Evans led the NFC in drop passes last year. I mean, this is not to diminish Mike Evans. Mike Evans is not a guy that I want to trade. You know, I didn't want to trade him. But to say that he's the best player in the deal, just, I mean, honestly, it seems kind of silly to me.
Well, and it sounds to me like you guys agree on AJ Green. Let's get to a couple other volatile guys, polarizing guys out there that it appears you guys agree on. I know already, Ray, how Evan feels about Kirk Cousins. How about you?
Well, I think I'm higher than most on Kirk Cousins, and I'm right there with Evan. And I think when I think about Kirk Cousins, I think about what he was with DeSean Jackson last year, which was completely different than the fantasy quarterback he was while DeSean Jackson was hurt. He averaged over four more fantasy points a game while attempting about four fewer passes whenever DeSean Jackson was in the lineup. He averaged almost 2 yards more per attempt, which is a huge bump in attempt whenever DeSean Jackson was in the lineup. So even when he wasn't throwing to DeSean Jackson, Jackson was able to create some of the separation that he needed, some of the space that he needed to even make bigger plays underneath. The plays that were going to Pierre Garçon and Jordan Reed that were going for shorter gains were able to find a little more room. And so DeSean Jackson was a huge part of that offense. Now he hasn't been at OTAs, and if DeSean Jackson ended up, you know, not being with the team for whatever reason, that would be a concern. But I think it's important to note how much different Kirk Cousins was with Jackson than without Jackson. And actually, he was the quarterback four from week nine on. So he was the fourth best fantasy quarterback from week 9 on, and he's getting ranked in the low teens. Now, I'm not saying he should be a top 5 quarterback, but it's pretty clear to me that with all the weapons they have, and they added Josh Doctson, and with their running game still a significant question, then Kirk Cousins is definitely a back-end quarterback one who has the upside, as he showed down the stretch last year, to be more than that in an offense that has produced some pretty big fantasy numbers. So I'm think that he is being dramatically undervalued. And if I'm able to get him as the 15th, the 16th quarterback, I'm going to be pretty excited about that.
What about this? Actually, this might seem a little bold and aggressive and maybe borderline dumb, but it actually wouldn't shock me if Kirk Cousins was a top 5 fantasy quarterback this year.
Yeah, that wouldn't shock me either, to be honest with you. I'm believing what I saw last year. What about, Ray, a couple of running backs that people seem to always be talking about, Latavius Murray and Thomas Rawls?
Well, on Murray, I think the general assumption is that he's going to lose a lot of the touches he had last year. He had 266 carries. He was very involved in the pass game. Roughly a third of the Raiders' total plays, not including sacks, ended in Latavius Murray, either a target or a carry. So he was a huge focal point of that offense. Now, that slowed down the stretch, and I think people think now, after an offseason where they talked about, oh, we need to get another running back in, we need to get another running back in, that it's going to get even worse. But Latavius Murray still averaged almost 17 carries a game over the second half of the season last year, and that was with Oakland in negative game script situations and with a very high pass percentage. And now they have a much better offensive line, an offensive line that's going to be able to create holes for whoever is running the football. They have a defense that I think everybody agrees should, at least on paper, be better, which puts them in better game script situations, puts them in better situations for Murray to get carries in the second half and especially in the fourth quarter. And so you're looking at a situation where the Raiders are probably going to run the football more this year than they even did last year. They're probably going to have a lower pass percentage than they did last year. In fact, the coaching staff's kind of talked about that a little bit. And they really didn't add anybody in the offseason. They added a fifth rounder, DeAndre Washington, who's more of a third down back, more of a passing down back. And so when you look at that depth chart and you say, well, who's going to come in and steal the carries from him? I don't see who that is. And rather than thinking that Latavius Murray is going to get fewer carries this year, if he stays healthy, which is always a big if for running backs, I would actually predict that he's going to get more carries than he did last year. And that's, I believe, a lot different than a lot of people in the fantasy community.
Yeah, he's in a really weird spot because, you know, we opened the offseason and there were good reasons to be down on him. It sounds like Reggie McKenzie and Jack Del Rio were down on him because they kept talking about how they wanted to add another RB. But then all they really added was a 5'8", 204-pound fifth-round pick. You know, and like you said, their game flow projects to be much, much more favorable for the running game. So I would put Latavius Murray as an undervalued guy right now that in MFL 10s, I mean, you could get him in the fifth round.
What about, Ray, let's also get into another guy that I know that Evan's been very outspoken about, and that's Kobe Fleener with his new role in New Orleans.
Yeah, he's another guy that I think, and maybe Murray falls into this as well, where people have made talent decisions about him, and those talent decisions are overriding the obvious opportunities that he has. And so these opportunities are going to lead to fantasy success, most likely, even though maybe he's not the most talented player. And we saw that New Orleans last year with Ben Watson, who had 110 targets. Only nine tight ends last year had over 100 targets. Now, Fleener is not going to be the target hog that Jimmy Graham was. Jimmy Graham was a 20%, 22%. He would get that big of a target share whenever he was in New Orleans. But Ben Watson got 16.5% of the targets last year, and I don't think Kobe Fleener at this point in each one's career is any worse of a passing threat than Ben Watson. In fact, I would argue he's a bigger passing threat than Ben Watson. So we're looking at a situation where Fleener could easily get 16% of the targets on a team that always throws over 600 times, which means he's looking at over 100 targets, again, which tight ends just don't do. And when you look at his red zone ability and how little the Saints have in terms of red zone threats, their outside receivers are Brandon Cooks and Willie Snead. They did bring in Michael Thomas, who's a guy I'm very high on out of Ohio State, and maybe he can play a role in there as well. But when you're looking, you're trying to kind of figure out the pecking order of red zone pass targets, I think Fleener's at the top of that. So you have a guy that's definitely going to get targets and is definitely going to get red zone targets. In a tight end, I mean, that's really all you can hope for. And so I think he's a top five tight end. I know Evan thinks he's a top five tight end too. That comes with a lot of risk, but I'm going to take him over a guy like Travis Kelce, who, as we saw last year, he's better than Kobe Fleener, I would say. But if you go back and look at him last year, he had one or two tight end one weeks or elite tight end weeks. He kind of racked up the stats because he played all 16 games. But if you actually go back and look at his season and look at the weeks that he helped you, they were very minimal. And so people, if we're looking at those two guys, I'm taking Fleener every time. And I don't think that that's a widely held opinion at all.
Yeah, and one argument against Fleener I've seen is that, oh, he couldn't do it with Luck. Well, he was the number six overall fantasy tight end in 2014 with Luck, and that was when Dwayne Allen got hurt. And whenever Dwayne Allen was out, Kobe Fleener was, you know, a top five tight end play really in that given week. And I don't think he's going to have playing time concerns in New Orleans after they gave him, what, like $8 million a year. So, and that year that he finished number six among tight ends, he only saw 90 targets. And I think he has a chance to get 110, 115 in New Orleans. And, I mean, in MFL 10s, every time I'm drafting, I'm getting him. Because I'll take him late seventh, early eighth round, and he's always there. And I don't know, maybe as we get closer to the season, his average draft position will start to move up as people start to wake up. But to me right now, he's an undervalued asset across the board.
Absolutely enjoyed getting to know you a little bit better, Ray, and hearing your take. It's very well thought out, the way you look at the opportunity, the percentage of targets for Watson, Fleener, really across the board. It was fun. But next week is going to be even more fun when you and Evan disagree and I get to decide which one made the more compelling argument, the high school economics teacher or the guy that still lives in his parents' basement. It is going to be epic next week. I cannot wait. Thanks for coming on today, Ray.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Man, I'm already looking forward to next week. It is going to be awesome. Just like I look forward anytime I know I can watch something on TV and make it a little bit more interesting. And you do that by going to betdsi.com. Very easy on your iPad or your phone or whatever to place a small wager, heck, a big wager, whatever you want to do for everything going on. We've got the NBA Finals start tomorrow night. The Stanley Cup Final is going on. We've got the Belmont in a week and a half. Another one of the Triple Crown races. Why not go to betdsi.com and take advantage of the free $10 if you use the code Tucker10. They even have another one you could use, Draft10, if you want to use that one as well. But Tucker10, and you are able to put 10 bucks on whatever you want to put on. The Warriors, the Cavs, the Penguins, the Sharks. I don't care. It's your $10, but you got to take advantage of it by going to betdsi.com and using the code Tucker10. That'll do it. Now that I told you how to use the 10 free dollars, I'm not going to tell you anything else. Just go to betdsi.com, Tucker10 right now. I'm stuffed. We're done.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast Podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.
I did it. I finally did it. I got a new car. I've been talking to you guys about it for a while. I got a new car. I needed one. My other one died. I got a new Denali, and I used TrueCar because why wouldn't I? I've been telling you guys about TrueCar for months now, and it's just a better experience. I mean, you're able to lock in the savings with a dealer on the website. They've got a huge certified dealer network. So if you're not sure how it works, you just go to the TrueCar website or you use the TrueCar app, and they've got this bell curve. It's a pricing curve that shows you exactly what that vehicle you want is going for in your local market. And then you can actually online connect with a TrueCar local certified dealer of your choosing, and you lock in the savings off the MSRP. You just go in, you hand them the certificate that you printed out off your computer, and boom, you're good to go. Over 2 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar.com or download the TrueCar app to enjoy a better car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.